this big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Telstra MobileNet Digital presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today we've got an exclusive interview with parliamentary paper hurling champion Peter Costello. We take you inside Australia's hottest night spot, the King's Cross Police Station, and we're going to see if we can't help suicide doctor Jack Kevorkian with an image makeover. Also today, another round of foolish behaviour. We dip into Australia's most envied prize pool on Radio Gladiators. And joining us live for a chat and a cuppa, it's our old buddy Glenn Robbins. Yes, it's all coming up on the program that makes Bosco Boskovic head for the shell shop with a couple of empty bottles. Martin Malloy.
S.A.
Welcoming you to Martin Malloy for Tuesday with, well, myself as always, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man who phoned Peter Costello yesterday and said, mate, you want to make an impact in Parliament, stop with all the talking, try throwing something at the PM, Mick Malloy.
I told him to wrap it in a brick. I said, yeah, that's the way to do it, and he didn't. He just threw the paper. Idiot.
Yeah, well, it's certainly got the whole country talking, and I reckon we get to the bottom of it right now by turning on Tony Martin's Celebrity Spotlight. Dear, thank you, Gracie and the Blowfish on the trumpets there. Now, as we intimated there, a livid Prime Minister, Paul Keating, barely restrained his anger in Parliament yesterday when Deputy Opposition Leader Peter Costello hurled a sheaf of papers at him. We've got the man himself on the line now. Mr. Costello, what were you up to?
Tony, I respect and admire the PM so much, I thought I'd give him his own ticker tape parade.
Right, I'm not buying it.
Damn.
I don't think he enjoyed it too much.
Did you see him? Did you actually see him? No. He was packing the big wuss, huh? I don't know why the ALP are so concerned with their quota system for female MPs. They've already got a big girl as leader.
Now, do you regret throwing the paper at the Prime Minister?
Nah. There's plenty more where that came from. Tomorrow I'm going to bring in some empty milk cartons and piff them at his noggin. I've also got a couple of empty cigarette packets lying around. Let's see how smug he looks with those donking off his thick skull.
Do you think you hurt the Prime Minister?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He was wounded.
Because you threw it so hard? Or?
No, because it was a copy of the latest opinion polls. Oh, he took one look and started bawling.
Right, you've got a lot of bad press over this. Most papers today are carrying lengthy stories condemning your behaviour. What do you intend to do about it?
I'm going to gather all these articles together.
Yes.
Wrap them up in a bundle.
Yep.
And chuck them at Keating.
Really? Is there anything you wouldn't chuck?
Yes, Tony. Yes, there is. I would never chuck any document that, in my opinion, was so thin or so light it couldn't be taken seriously.
Such as?
Well, any of our policy statements, for starters.
Of course. Now, do you think you should apologise to the Prime Minister?
Well, I've thought about this, and yes, Tony, yes, I do. In fact, I've just finished typing out a full written apology.
Are you going to send it or deliver it in person?
I was thinking of just rolling it up and smacking him in the ear with it.
Mr. Costello, thanks for your time.
I'm going to wrap Paul Keating in a cocoon of horror. Yes.
Small town, that's John Mellencamp here on Martin Malloy. And Mick, today, I had to go into...
Hang on a second, Tone. This isn't going to be...
Yes. I think it is time for another...
Almost amusing personal anecdotes.
Here on Martin Malloy. Here's what's happened. I've gone into the city and I've decided to take the car instead of public transport because, well, I just love to drive round and round in circles swearing at myself.
That's part of the fun.
It is. Anyway, haven't been able to find a park, so after the usual quandary of whether to park in a loading zone or not, because who are they for, really? I mean, they're for people who are loading stuff, truck drivers, but I always spend just a few minutes wondering, you know, whether I can stretch the criteria just a little bit. If I go into a shop and buy something, when I get back to my car, what do? I
loaded into the car, sure. Your Honour. Well, I've chickened out of that, and I've decided to go into one of those parking buildings, and I've done the usual thing. I've forgotten to remember which floor I'm on. Yeah. And it's one of those buildings that doesn't have numbered levels. They've opted for brightly coloured silhouettes of easily identified objects. Instead of, you know, level one, level two, level three, they've got yellow rubber ducky level, green bowler hat level, red battleship level. Who do they think is parking cars? Their four-year-olds, the intellectually challenged Warwick Kappa. I don't know, either that or the place has been designed by the makers of Monopoly.
Right.
Oh, I want to be the battleship. Nah, Dad, can we park on the shoe? Anyway, come back from the shops and after wandering around Blue Submarine for 20 minutes, I suddenly remembered I'm on Purple Fish, found my car, and what do you know, someone's dinged the driver's side door. Yeah. So when I got down to the bloke in the little booth, you know the bloke in the little booth is just sitting there reveling in the power he wields over that boom gate arm thing, and this guy looked very happy with his little kingdom. Oi, mate, I can make the arm go up or down, don't mess with me, I am the gatekeeper, none shall pass without recognising the authority of the boom gate arm thing bloke. So I know I'm in trouble, and I've said, someone's dinged my car. He's gone, mate, what were you on? Battleship, fish, bowler hat. And I said, mate, what were you on when you designed this place? It's like parking your car through the looking glass, waiting for the March hare to come and take my ticket. Is Dieter Brummer designing parking buildings now? Anyway, and because I couldn't actually bring myself to say, well, actually, I was up on Purple Fish, I've decided to let it slide and just said, well, how much is the tab? Now, at this point, I'd forgotten that on weekends, which is usually the only time I use those joints, it's like $2 for a whole day. But on a weekday, it's bring your checkbook. I've been there an hour and a half. This guy says $19.
Cut it out.
Now, for $19, I reckon they'd let you park in the foyer of the Sheraton. Anyway, I've given the bloke a $50 note, because that's all I had, $50 note, and he's gone off. He's shifting uneasily in the booth. The boom gate thing's going up and down, up, and he's confused. And he's going, mate, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? $50? Haven't you got anything smaller? I've said, well, I will do once you've given me my change, buddy.
SM.
G'day, Trev.
G'day, Davo. How are you, mate?
Pissed as, mate. This is me 18th bourbon and coke.
Oh, mate, you are a legend.
Hey, forget about me. Check out Pilko and Smacker. They've been sinking laybacks since 3 o'clock this arvo.
Yeah, I know. It's their plan, they dream, to write their names on the wall in one continuous spew.
Gotta hand it to them. I really admire men of vision. Another drink, mate?
Why not?
Could you get that?
Hello, King's Cross Police Station. Senior Sergeant Beastmaster speaking. What's that? Two drunken disorderlies at the Pink Flamingo overturning furniture and threatening patrons. Right, here's what you do, madam. Have the manager pay them $500 each and tell them to report back to the station for reassignment. What? One of them's attempting to remove your G-string with his teeth. Can you see his badge? Right, is he a detective sergeant? Excellent. Listen, if any officer of a lower rank tries that sort of thing, you call us straight away and we'll have him promoted immediately. We don't want the lads getting a bad reputation. Bye.
Stupid cow, calling during happy hour. Should be a law against it.
Mate, how's that big case you've been working on?
It's almost open, Sarge. I think it's the black label stuff too.
Right, legend.
What are you working on?
Me and the lads from the bomb squad have been attempting to perfect this. Watch closely. Okay, got a light?
Here you go.
Stand back!
Fantastic. You gonna use that to subdue armed suspects?
Nah, mate, I'm unveiling it at the Christmas party. It's my ticket to the rank of Assistant Commissioner.
King's Cross Police Station, Sergeant Banana Man speaking. What? Two officers down at the Prince of Wales? Send backup. Okay, what do you need? A keg? Listen, have the street sealed off. I'll send two trucks over from Liquorland. See ya.
Mate, how are you going with those new strip search procedures?
It's tops, mate. Every suspect not only has to get the gears off, now they have to jump out of a cake and give the senior officer present a lap dance.
Oh, legend.
Oh, look out. Here comes the boss.
At ease, gentlemen. Everything okay?
Yes, sir. Drink, sir?
Officer, please. I'm on duty. Make it a double.
Only to be with you. That's your Roachford on Martin Malloy. Just a reminder, Radio Gladiators is coming up, and in the next hour, Glenn Robbins will be in for a chat. He's always got something to say.
Absolutely. Very interesting young man. I'm very keenly watching his progress, too. I think he's a real goer. He's watching the future.
Yeah, he's a mad keen golfer, too.
Isn't he? Must get some golfing anecdotes out.
We'll have him jumping through hoops. Anyway, here's some good news. For the many fans, and I know they're out there, of the charismatic, if dangerously unstable son of Saddam Hussein, Uday. We haven't had any Uday news for a while, but it seems he's got his eye on his old man's job. Sources say Uday is restless, his power is growing, and it could be just a matter of days before he makes a play for the top job. Now, as we know, he's quite willing to blow Rellos away at the dinner table at the drop of a beret. I reckon Saddam would be eating out a fair bit these days. Going through the drive-thru in an armoured personnel carrier. But even if Uday does seize power, what difference will it make? Someone said to me this morning, he'll be an insane leader of Iraq, as opposed to the measured, rational leadership the nation currently enjoys. But my bet is, you know, Uday's first public announcement will be that he's dismantled his dad's super gun because it was such a stupid idea, and instead work has commenced on the new super duper gun. Mick, our producer, Grace, has handed me an interesting bit of paper today.
Has he really?
Yeah, this is Celebrities in America's Home Phone Numbers. Where did you get this, Grace? This is off the internet?
Sort of.
Off the newfangled technology of the internet. Mm. Listen to some great names here. Dr. Jack Kevorkian's home phone number. Brian Gumbel. Bobcat Goldthwait. Do we really want to talk to Bobcat Goldthwait? It's too early in the day.
Crikey, I'm not up to it.
I'm not here right now. Leave a message after the annoying noise.
It's something like that, I imagine.
That's pretty much it.
Ronald Reagan. I'll tell you what we should do. We should phone Dr. Jack Kevorkian and give him Ronald Reagan's phone number. I think that's a good idea.
Let's get to it.
They'd have a lot to talk about, I reckon. Is this for real, Gracie?
Yeah.
I could just be wasting valuable time on the program and, you know.
Can't have that.
That wouldn't happen, would it? Not at this part, no. Okay, sorry about this, people. I hope you've got, you know, magnetic Scrabble or something to amuse yourself while I'm doing this. Okay, this is Jack Kevorkian, is it? Oh, engage. So you'd have the phone off the hook. He's probably, you know, he's probably got jumper leads out and he's just, you know, doing a freebie on a neighbour or something like that.
You'd think he'd get corpse waiting.
You'd think so. You'd think so. But I was...
Is that it, is it? We can't get him? Can we try again later?
That's award-winning radio right there. But Dr. Jack Kevorkian, it's interesting. I've been reading about him because he's got this Dr. Death reputation hanging over him. Apparently he's not getting many patients.
Is that right?
For his normal practice.
No, well, you could understand it, couldn't you? Mm. You know, elective surgery. I'm sure you'd be electing to go elsewhere, wouldn't you?
Indeed. I reckon we can help him out, though. Although we haven't been able to contact him, I reckon we can help him out with a few suggestions, and it sounds like a Q4.
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Dr. Kevorkian was probably on hold because he was engaged because he was already, like, on our phone lines waiting to get through on Gladiators. That's what I reckon. He's a regular caller.
He wants one of those Discmen.
Absolutely.
Because he wants to hear a bit of, a bit of better music and more of it while he's on the job bumping people off.
All you have to do is put a Michael Bolton CD inside that Discman and you've got a suicide machine.
Ready to go.
For Dr. Kevorkian.
There you go. Write that down, people. But anyway, we're looking for slogans, I think. Mainly slogans that can help people, can help Dr. Jack Kevorkian attract more patients. We're looking for ways to soften his image. And it can be a slogan, or it can be maybe an ad idea, an idea for an ad for the Yellow Pages of the... It's just marketing ideas for Dr. Death, Jack Kevorkian. And I don't know, slogans like, I'm thinking Dr. Jack Kevorkian, Death.
but with so much more. Or, Dr. Jack Kevorkian, I'll kill you with kindness.
That's a beauty.
Something like that.
I like that one.
Yeah. A spoonful of cyanide makes the medicine go down. We're looking for ways to help Dr. Jack Kevorkian out of a hole. So, and the prize as well, we've mentioned the Sony lightweight Discman. And, you know, it's about the same weight as, I think, is one of those 4-and-20 pies that we love so much.
It floats.
Does it?
Yeah.
It's about... That's handy.
Yeah, you attach it and you can walk around like a balloon.
Can you go diving with it?
Yes.
Can you?
To 500 feet.
It's a diving CD player. Great.
Absolutely.
And also, of course, this is brought to you, as I hinted there, by 4-and-20 pies. Nothing hits the spot like a 4-and-20 pie. It's the pie at the cutting edge of pie technology. That's what it is.
It leaves other pies in its wake. It looks over, as it heads towards, like, the pie Valhalla, the 4-and-20 has a quick look in the rear vision mirror to check out where all the other pies are and how far behind they are. And right now, it's so far out in front, it can't see any.
And I'll tell you where the other pies are. They're getting out of the pie game and they're getting the proper job.
They're becoming pasties because they know they don't have the clout, they don't have the might, they don't have the brass
to mix up
with the 4-and-20.
They don't have the beef.
Beef. Hello, beef.
I think we've sold the 4-and-20 concept. If you've got a marketing suggestion for Dr. Jack Kevorkian, the doctor of death, call us now, 1-800-657-657. Today, on Martin Molloy's Radio Gladiators, we're looking for, well, marketing slogans for Dr. Jack Kevorkian, a.k.a. Dr. Death, because we read in the paper today he's having trouble attracting business. I can't imagine why. So our marketing experts out there in the radio audience have been hard at work. Who have you got for us, Mickey?
I've got Naomi on the line. G'day, Naomi.
Hi.
All right. Well, what have you come up with?
Dr. Death, you'll be dying to see me.
Yeah, I like that. It's simple, it's straightforward.
It's neat, it's concise. It's not blowing our heads off, Naomi, but it's in the right terrain. Okay?
Okay, now can we go better? Who have we got next?
We've got Terry.
Terry.
G'day, how are you?
Good, Terry. How's things?
Good, mate.
All right, you've been hard at it. What have you come up with as a slogan for Dr. Death?
Dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
Oh, I see. And you'd have a bit of the acca-dacca going in the background, would you?
That's it, mate. TNT, cyanide, you name it.
All right. And how would he actually get them to commit suicide then? Would he play AC/DC records backwards or something and then take their own lives, would they?
Yeah, that could be it, yeah. Oh, or a stick of jelly knot up the clacker, you never know.
The choice is yours. I like that about Dr. Death. He doesn't ram the treatment down your throat. He gives you a couple of choices. Well, that's very interesting, Terry.
That's great. It's a caring touch. I like that. And I can picture Dr. Kevorkian in the school gear too, and that's painting an attractive picture. Who have we got next?
Quite a somber tone, I imagine, as he lit that fuse. We've got, believe it or not, Sharon.
Hi.
There you go. How are you, Sharon?
Yeah. I've got Dr. Death, try now, pay later. Die by points available.
Oh, yeah. Die by points. Yeah. Oh, you'd be accumulating those furiously down at the shopping market, wouldn't you? Oh, I've got to get my die bys.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going on a big trip.
Not a bad suggestion. Who's next, Mickey?
We got Rick on the line. G'day, Rick.
G'day, how are you?
Not too bad. Okay, what do you come up with?
If you are ready for your last breath, give me a call. I'm Dr. Death.
Ah, you know him with a bit of a limerick.
Of course.
A bit of poetry. Tell me, does Dr. Death, I mean, he does have a standard practice. Mm. I mean, he hasn't just got the one string to his bow, i.e. death, has he? I mean, you don't go in saying, I've got a bit of, I'm a bit fluey. He doesn't go straight to death. He doesn't go, well, it's going to have to be death.
Oh, I think he could. It depends if you've got private cover. I don't know.
Is that how it works? Okay, well, we need another suggestion. Who's it going to be?
I think we've only got one more. I think, is it Paul? Are you there?
Yo.
G'day, Paul. How are you?
Good.
What's happening there? I think Dr. Kevorkian has just got to him. I think he was calling from the surgery. What you're actually hearing there is his pulse.
Well, we've lost Paul to Dr. Jack. Okay, we're going to have to choose a winner from what we've got. I like the poetic touch there, Mickey.
The poetic touch, the last one, did you?
Yeah.
The rhyme? Well, fine. Then so be it. Dr. Rick.
Are you still with us, Dr. Rick?
I sure am.
Okay, what was your slogan again? One more time.
If you are ready for your last breath, give me a call. I'm Dr. Death.
Okay, I'm sure Dr. Jack's already calling us up, and he'll have you on the telly in no time. You've won the Sunny Disc, man.
Thank you kindly.
Well, thanks for playing along today, Rick. And we'll do it again at the same time tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be a death-related segment, although death and gladiators do seem to go together on a frighteningly regular basis.
Synonymous.
We'll be back with a much sunnier topic on Radio Gladiators tomorrow, but stick around, people. In the next hour, we'll be chatting with Glenn Robbins. Things can only get better. That's the motto here at Martin Molloy. It's the second big hour, and time to welcome a guest, time to rope somebody else into the fray. And this bloke, he's been on before, and much to our surprise and delight, he's come back for seconds. It's Glenn Robbins.
Hello, boys.
Hey, Glenn, how are you?
Nice to be here.
So I.
Now, we've heard some disturbing talk and news about you, Glenn. I understand you're pulling on the tights and getting into the panto game. What's the story?
I am doing a pantomime written by Bob Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it in Melbourne at Budinski's from the 6th to the 10th and the 13th to the 17th of September. 10 shows only, original panto. Big cast, special guests, anyone from Jamal and Russell Gilbert, me, Shane Bourne, Eric Banner, people dropping in, people dropping their dacks, people doing everything.
It's just crazy.
It's just crazy.
It's a nut house.
But it's not one of your neighbours type pantos.
Oh, right.
No, it's not one of your Dieter Brumman goes over to England, you know, gets the cash, comes back type.
Spends it on drugs.
It's an adult panto. So we're actually getting Sergeant Bob Cryer from The Bill to come and appear in ours. But it's an original script by Bobby Franklin, and it's sort of lending from all the traditional sort of pantos, and it should be fun.
So there's lots of audience participation and all that kind of gear?
Yeah, I think so.
Depending on how it goes.
Is it
going to be behind you? Is
yeah,
it
going to
be
sort of
panto
stuff.
Horses and that kind of thing?
Yeah, or? People dressing up, you know, all that sort of thing. And no, it will be fun. But actually, go ahead.
It's going to be a case of, like, check your ego in at the door, though, with, like, you know, backstage. You've got some big names there. I hope that sorts itself
out. Well, that's the thing. If you buy a ticket, you take a bit of a bet because anyone could drop in, you know, like Russell Gilbert's going to do a bit, Shamoan's going to do a bit, you know, so anyone could be
so the big names are
flying in for it.
Seinfeld.
Steve Martin's doing it.
He'll
be doing it a little bit.
Boutros Ghali.
Yep. So it's a bit of a bet, and it may well pay off.
Mm. Yeah. Well, if the lazy season comes around and Glenn Robbins' name's on it, then you got him for the night.
Yeah, it's terrific. Now, one thing we should mention, though, is that it's Bobby Franklin, who wrote it, received his residency the other day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in Australia.
Yes, as you know, he's from London, and he got the big letter which said, you are now an Australian citizen. Now, I'm thinking, not really good enough, is it? I mean, you fill out the forms, you get the letter, you're an Aussie, and now you get your resident. I don't know about that. I reckon you should have to be put through some sort of initiation. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, and I'm thinking gladiators. I'm thinking running the gauntlet on the gladiators. You know, you get the cherry belly, you get the wedgie, you get the dack, you get the nugget, you get up on the boom gate, you get the, you know, you get the nuggeting. Welcome to Australia, pal. You know, that's the sort of thing we do here. If you don't like it, bugger off. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm 100% behind you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure Bob would love to do that too.
Yeah.
Now, one thing you haven't done, Glenn, is you haven't told us what's the name of this pando of yours.
Oh, haven't I?
No.
Oh, it's Who's That Guy with the Axe, and it's on a Budinski's. I'm saying this very clearly.
Yeah.
On a Budinski's from the 6th to the 17th, basically.
And obviously, if it's a hit, if it takes off, if people just go, I want more axe work, it's going to go on to around the whole country.
Well, we hope that we will go bigger and better all the way around the country, and it'll be, you know, bigger than something that's really big. Gee, I speak well.
Bigger than Senator Robert Ray, for
exactly,
example.
Yes.
Okay, Glenn, don't think you're just getting out of here just like that. Can you stick around?
I'd love to.
Okay, well, put the axe down. We'll be back for a bit of culture in just a moment with Glenn Robbins on Martin Molloy. Here on Martin Molloy, Glenn Robbins is with us. And Glenn, a constant problem we have on this program,
yep.
I don't know if you hear it that much, but there's a lot of sailor talk, there's a lot of blue language, there's a lot of gutter language on the program, and what we're constantly doing is we're trying to get a bit more art and a bit more culture into the show. Can you help?
Well, I'll give it a go. I've been to the Matisse exhibition.
Oh, that's a bit classy.
I didn't see you there.
Yeah, well,
I wonder why.
I was sitting on my esky, didn't you see me?
Of course. Yeah. That was you.
A funny thing happened, actually, because I was there looking at the pictures, as you do, and there were two. There was two nude ladies. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to the curator, and I said to him, how much would that one be worth? And he went, and he said, well, we can't really say, but, you know, the reserve would be around about 14 million. God, a lot of money. And I said, what about that one there next to it? And he goes, oh, that one, about 15 million. I'm thinking, well, what do you get for your extra million on that one? You know, it's just another nude Sheila, you know what I'm saying?
Was one nuder than the other?
No. I mean, I think I'm going to put a hat on her or something, you know. Put her on a bike, eat an ice cream, something like that. But no,
Maybe it comes with something. Maybe there's accessories.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, you know, those guys who do sculptures, you know what I'm saying? They do these sculptures and they don't have a head. You know what I'm saying? It's a good gig, isn't it, being an artist? You know, at least have a crack at doing the head. You know what I'm saying? No head, no arms, no legs, $1 million, there you go.
That's one expensive torso.
You know, can you imagine some artist, you know, he's at home, he's doing his landscape, you know, and the wife comes in. Oh, phone bill, dear. Oh, that's all right. I'll whack a couple of, you know, extra birds in here and put a house with some smoke coming out of the roof. There you go. Oh, hang on. If I put a horse over here, we've got a holiday to Queensland. There you go.
Did he have any of those ones that you turn upside down and it's something completely different? Matisse?
No, I'll tell you who does. That's the guy, the weirdo one. Surrealistic one.
Dali?
I went to the Dali exhibition in Canberra, and you get one of these headsets, right? You pay $5, and they explain it, what they are, what it means. You know, there's fish coming out of eyes. There's, you know, people with bloody candles stuck in places. You know, and they say stuff like, "No, could this be the artist's attempt to come to terms with his childhood, or is it his attempt to find the turmoil with his subconscious? You know, might it be that?" And I'm thinking, I've paid $5. I don't want to know what it might be. I want to know what the fish coming out of the eyes means. You know what I'm saying?
I demand certainty.
Yeah, $5, fair enough, I want to know. I want to come away. I don't want to come away confused. You know what I'm saying? Shit, really does. But my dad used to work at the art. My dad used to work at the art gallery. Yes, he did, as a matter of fact.
Oh, Mr. Robbins.
Yeah, he used to work at the art gallery, and this is when I was at school, and which was really handy because when I was doing HSE art for my final exam, I handed in Monet's Water Lilies.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How'd you go?
I got a C-. For it. Bad definition.
Sort of turned it upside
down.
Yeah,
that's right.
Must try harder.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Glenn, thanks for coming in today. Have you got anything else you want to just run through quickly? Hey, here's something funny. We had Russell Gilbert in yesterday, and he used to do a lot of touring with Russell Gilbert, and I remember seeing a tour poster that, because this happens to us a lot, our names are always being misspelt on tour posters. I get Malloy a lot, and you've had, Martini. I've heard Engelbert Martin. I saw a tour poster, and it was you, Trevor Marmalade, and Russell Gilbert, and read... It had Russell Gilbourne, Trevor Marmaduke, and Glenn Roberts, all on the one poster.
It's worth a lot of money, that poster.
it's hanging up at the Matisse exhibition as we speak.
It's $14 million worth.
Well, thanks for coming in today, Glenn, and once again, the name of the panto
is Who's That Guy with the Axe? At Budinski's in Melbourne from next week.
Yeah, and you'd be a fool to miss it, you really would, because it's shenanigans, it's tomfoolery.
It's dressing up.
And just when you think there's no more, it's skylarking as well. So we've been speaking to Glenn Robbins, Panto Man, here on Martin Malloy. When it's out in your hands. What's it time for? It's time for Foolish Behaviour. Foolish behaviour. We haven't done foolish behaviour for quite a while.
Your bit of foolish behaviour was letting me go first. That was your bit of foolish behaviour, my friend.
But since we haven't done the segment for quite a while, it actually took quite a bit of effort on my part to behave foolishly under that music.
Do you know what? When we get to the end of that bit of music there, I get a stitch. Because it doesn't sound like much for you at home listening, but in here, we're going... We're running up the walls.
It's even more foolish than it sounds.
Absolutely.
Now, Mick, have you got any mail?
Yes, I do. I've got one from a Peter Berlin. Don't know if that's a real name or not, but that's the one he's using. And he's a Queensland listener. Anyway, dear Tony and Mick, thought you might be interested in the following true story, which goes back a few years to when the Berlin Wall was coming down in the Gorbachev era. Right. I was staying at the Intercontinental Hotel in Copenhagen in December, and the temperatures were well below freezing. I was mistaken one night in the hotel lift for Gorby by some really well-oiled Russian military officers.
Right.
I had a scar on my forehead as a result of a New York mugging, and I suppose after the first bottle of Stollies, any great big Aussie in an overcoat with a scar on his forehead and a dead beaver clinging to his skull is going to look like the then-famous Russian president. Sounds like this Aussie has been to the advanced hair clinic at some stage, Tony. No amount of my explaining that I was not Gorby could convince them. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I was the Russian president for a night on the piss with an admiral, a general, and an Air Force commanding officer all in full uniform, which would look a lot like the Russian village people from where I'm sitting, all slurring every word, all whacked off their huge pockmarked faces, all subsequently driving the big round China bus steering wheel home. Well, he's turned into Maxie Walker there. All driving that big round China bus steering wheel home.
I tell you what, you're staring into the face of the big porcelain wheel. You got that cherry in there.
Sorry, Nick.
Mate, you're looking like... But anyway, to make it even worse, they were of such high rank that they, and subsequently I, had armed bodyguards and Danish military police motorcycle escorts for our six-hour tour of the seediest of all of Denmark's red light districts and live sex shows. Well, now he's doing an impersonation of the current Russian leader. What's all that about? Ah. It's from Peter Berlin, and that's foolish behaviour, isn't it?
That's genuine foolish behaviour, but I think I can go you one better, Mick, because I've got a letter here which I should just warn you isn't in the best possible taste.
Oh, really?
But here we go, and listen to this. Dear Mick and Tony, I recently spent an evening indulging in what can only be described as utterly foolish behaviour. Things started to go wrong when me and some mates from work decided to take a long lunch at one of those table dancing places. Before you know it was 7 o'clock, too late to return to work, and we were all off our faces. I don't know how it happened, but somehow a couple of my buddies persuaded me to strip down to me underpants and have a crack at this table dancing caper myself. Amazingly, despite my uncanny resemblance to that recent photograph of Marlon Brando in his jocks, my amateurish performance was met with some acclaim, and in no time my undies were brimming with $5 and $10 notes. An hour later, however, with all the money spent on margaritas, my popularity was in decline, and after a brief but bloody encounter with the bouncers, I was shown the door. After wandering around the car park building for close to an hour, I finally remembered I hadn't actually driven and resolved to hail a cab. Miraculously, considering I was wearing only a pair of unflattering Y-fronts, I managed to do this. In fact, the driver was quite cordial, at least until I vomited into his glove box, after which the conversation became a little strained. Actually, he stopped the cab and threw me into the gutter, but wouldn't you know it, we were only two blocks from my work. By this time, it was 8:45 in the morning, I strolled into the foyer, received a round of applause from my colleagues, and so began another typical day at the office. And that's from Senior Sergeant Pilko Prentice, Officer in Command at the King's Cross Police Station. Foolish behaviour in extremis. So we've got time for here today on Martin Malloy. That was Billy Joel, assisted by Mick Malloy, mm-hmm. with River of Dreams. And Mick, I know it's we're running a bit late, but there's always time for a quick bit of Michael Jackson news. Yes, time for a quick Freak Watch.
I love Freak Watch, Tone.
Listen to this out of the papers today. A Brazilian boy is suing Michael Jackson for $27 million, saying he was injured when he was struck by one of two cars in Jacko's entourage 2 years ago in San Paulo. I tell you what, though, Michael must be relieved. He's being sued by a young boy, but just for hitting him with his car.
That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, he's just running young boys down now. That's encouraging, isn't it?
You know, I reckon the Jackson camp would be welcoming this as good publicity.
I think it is.
And, well, that's enough freak talk for today. We've got to go. Thanks to our guests, Glenn Robbins and Peter Costello, and all our gladiators. Tomorrow we'll be joined by everybody's favourite Frenchman back in the country and spilling his guts, Jimmy Barnes, live on the show. But until then, remember, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.
Martin Molloy is a misguided production in association with Half-Baked Ideas and Ill-Conceived Concepts Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Telstra Mobile Net Digital. Pete Smith speaking.